everyone. Welcome back to the Earthdawn Survival Guide, the podcast for all disciplines, paths, players, and game masters with your questers, Josh and Dan. I am Dan.
I am Josh.
And on today's podcast, we will be discussing all things quizzical, as we have a ton of emails to get to because they all been sitting in the inbox for a little while. So if you have any questions for us about anything we're going to talk about tonight or you'd like us to talk about in the future, please contact us at edsgpodcast@gmail.com. Josh, how was your weekend?
My weekend was awesome. It was Memorial Day weekend for those of you in the U.S. For those of you overseas, it is basically the last Monday in May is set aside in memory of those who died in combat in service to the country in wars and stuff like that. It is sort of considered the kickoff of summer, but I took a couple of days off beforehand, made it an even longer weekend, took the kids out of school for a couple of days, and we went out to California to visit some folks and do some touristy stuff in L.A. Went to Scum and Villainy, which is a sort of sci-fi themed cantina bar on Hollywood Boulevard.
I can imagine that.
Went to the L.A. County Museum of Art, went to the La Brea Tar Pits, went to a pirate adventure, which is like medieval times, but with pirates. That was awesome.
Even better.
Then went to Santa Monica, walked the pier there. That's the end of Route 66, that famous highway that has had songs and stories told about it. Waited in the Pacific, took a whole bunch of pictures, went up to Griffith Observatory. Yeah, just generally had a good time, ran Earth Dawn for the folks that I was visiting with on Saturday night. And so, yeah, it was really, really cool. A lot of fun, somewhat tiring, but really enjoyable. And I was glad I went.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad you had a good time. I didn't do anything nearly as fun. So we'll skip over me. Okay, on to our emails. We've got a few to get to this week. So this will be the entire episode. If you don't like emails, sorry. If you do, send us your own. We'll read it on air, like this one. I think we have a new listener, Walter. Sent us one. Hello, Dan and Josh. Just wanted to say thanks from an old, since first edition in the 90s, Earth Dawn player. I'm enjoying all the topics from timeline to looking at disciplines and everything in between. I currently started a new game, although third edition, with the family, and afterwards my 13-year-old son came up with your podcast as he was searching for information. So I am training my own Earth Dawn novices to carry on the torch. I started to creep up to the current issue from the beginning. It will take me a while to get there. Thank you very much, and keep up the good work. Best regards from Germany, Walter.
Thank you, Walter. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to Earth Dawn. Keep an eye out if you are interested in picking up 4th edition stuff, as I mentioned in several episodes. It's all available in electronic format, both from the FASA Games webshop and from DriveThruRPG. Physical books are also available through the FASA Games shop, and we typically have Kickstarters periodically. There should be one coming up. I have no idea when you're going to listen to this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Keep an eye out. We will announce when a Kickstarter is imminent. I do know that there have been some headaches and difficulties with getting stuff to European customers, and we understand that and are investigating better solutions for fulfillment than we have been dealing with in the past. That is a whole Brexit, England, EU kerfuffle that was fine when we started this thing up, but since then has gotten to be a bit of a headache. A
little bit. However, we'll get there. On to one from Matthew. I'm going to do the short ones, the short emails first off, just get them, I can't say out of the way, but we have some questions coming later on. Hello, Josh and Dan. I wanted to tell you about a show in case you did not know about it. It is called Silo and is on Apple TV. So far, the series takes place underground. The world had some type of cataclysmic event that caused everyone to go underground. It is sci-fi, but ideas on what life could have been like inside the cares. Keep up the good work on the podcast, Matthew.
I was not aware of this show. I don't have Apple TV. It's been on the list of things that I would get for a short period of time to watch a few things. Severance is supposed to be really, really good. They did a film version of the musical Come From Away, which is about the Canadian communities that took in all of the planes that were forced to land on 9/11 and is really, really good. So, yeah, I just haven't gotten around to it, but I hadn't heard of Silo. I will put it on the list to investigate at some point.
Fair enough. I don't have Apple TV either, but I just can't afford all the streaming services.
I hear you there.
Just can't get them all. This one is from Riley. Just to toss another setting at you, this is massive and detailed in every area, and also really makes every culture seem very fulfilled and examined. Eberron by Keith Baker. This is a setting that has been in development by Keith since D&D 3.5, and has survived through all of the editions, having books published in every edition. Like Earthdawn, every book is conceptually canon, and as the books have moved from edition to edition, the timeline also constantly moves forward and expands. And all of this work has been constantly headed up by Keith Baker, who is still actively developing the setting, and is also active in the board game development community, having a handful of award-winning games under his belt on top of his amazing Eberron work.
Yeah, I have not had the pleasure of meeting Keith at all, but I do recognize the name. Eberron was the setting that won Wizards of the Coast's new setting search back that they ran in third edition. I submitted a preliminary one-page, here's my pitch kind of idea, and didn't make it past that. I have not looked at Eberron at all, so I don't really have any familiarity with the setting, except in the broadest terms, but it doesn't surprise me from what I know of Keith's work that it is a solid setting and does some things a little bit differently with the traditional Dungeons & Dragons setting setup. So I'm aware of it, and it's good to hear that it is a massive and continued expanding setting.
Yeah, I did a quick search on Amazon when we got the email, and I think there's like 20 or 25 different things listed with Eberron in the title. Only a few of them written by Keith, but otherwise, you know, it's been expanded upon by other people as well. So as Josh has said before, I'm going to quote you. Crib from other sources. Put in your Earthdawn game. Good Earthdawn. So that's just me. Next, we have one from Aaron, who happened to have to email us twice because your first one got caught in the spam folder. So here's his latest email, and we're going to go in reverse. Morning, Dan and Josh. I emailed a while back on the subject of forging living armor, but just wanted to see if you had an opportunity to think about this at all. I appreciate it. It's a difficult question to answer, but wanted to pop it back in here just in case it was missed. Great job as always, guys. So here's his first email. Greetings, both. As always, loving the podcast, amazing work with the troll moots and horrors. I specifically enjoyed the episodes with Giftbringer, as it is relevant to one of the previous questions I emailed in with a while back. And I also played an Obsidian Warrior from the Rockhorn. It's definitely a lot of fun played, and Obsidian with a little troll influence thrown in. Anyway, to my question. Living armor, such as Blood Pebble, and living crystal that is embedded into the skin, is presumably not subject to the same forging rules as standard armor? The way I figure, forging this armor would need to happen in one of a few ways, but none of them are by any means perfect. A. Forging takes place before installation and cannot be reforged again once implanted. I feel this devalues living armor, which is a shame, in my opinion, as certainly towards higher circles, forge armor could potentially make light armor much better than living armor, and it would easily be replaced with thread armors. B. Forging takes place before, but anytime the armor is forged again, it must be removed first and then forged and implanted again afterwards. This eats into downtime and costs to have the armor forged and removed or installed. Option C. It can't be forged at all. If you want to forge armor, buy something else. This I do not like. One of the many amazing things about Earthdawn is the imaginative and unique armor, and these are some of my favorites, so to limit them feels wrong. My question then is, how would you rule this? Is there another option I've not thought of?
I would go with option B. That's the one that does not unduly penalize living armor as a thing. There is nothing that restricts living armor from being implanted and removed later and implanted again. It doesn't add a whole lot to the downtime period. Blood Pebble, for example, only takes one day of work to implant or remove. So that would just add 2 days onto the cycle that would happen with the improvements. I don't think that's a huge problem. Living Crystal is a little bit more intense. That does require 3 days of work to implant and remove. So that does increase the downtime situation there, adding effectively almost a week to the overall downtime. It doesn't make much sense to me to restrict the ability of living armors to be forged. And he's specifically talking, I think, here about implanted armors, Blood Pebble and Living Crystal. Fernweave is a living armor, but it doesn't have the implant and removal time. You just take it on and off like you would normal armor. So it's only those implanted armors really that address this. I think they should be able to be forged like anything else. I think the implanting or removing is potentially inconvenient, but not really game breaking. That just ties into the whole idea of downtime in the first place. I certainly don't like the idea that it can't be forged at all. I can't think of anything better. The only other option conceivably would be you don't even need to remove it in order to get it forged, but then that means that the character wearing the armor needs to sort of be there in the presence of the weaponsmith for them to do the things they're doing, and that doesn't make a whole lot of sense either.
Fair.
It's a little bit awkward because, in one sense, Blood Pebble and Living Crystal are not really armors in the sense that, say, chainmail or fernweave or plate armor would be. When you have a suit of Blood Pebble armor that is not implanted in someone, it doesn't look like, say, a chain shirt does, where you can hang it up on a dressmaker's dummy and see what it looks like. It's really like probably like a box with all of the pebbles in it.
It looks like a bowl of cereal.
And so from a narrative standpoint, what is done to forge Living Crystal or Blood Pebble armor is probably not exactly the same sort of thing that would be done for more traditional armors. But from a mechanic standpoint, I don't see any reason to limit what you are able to do with them. You just need to factor in the extra little bit of downtime that might come about, which, again, for Blood Pebble is only a couple of days. For Living Crystal does end up being 6 total, 3 to take it out, then 3 to put it back. But I think by the time you're looking at Living Crystal armor as a thing, you're probably higher circle, and an extra few days of downtime is not that big a deal.
Agreed. So he does have some follow-up questions, because this is what we do. Could you potentially have a threaded set of pebble or crystal? And if so, how would that work?
It would work like any other thread item. It would have a name. It would have key knowledges that would need to be researched. And you would weave a thread to it the same way that you would any other kind of threaded armor with, you know, legend points and boosts and things like that.
He does expand on his question. I imagine researching something like this for key knowledges would be kind of difficult when, I imagine, one set of armor would seem very similar to any other set.
Potentially. I mean, that's where you would want to figure out how the armor might look different. I mentioned just a moment ago, like, it's maybe in a box that perhaps the box or case that it is in could have special symbols or runes or whatever carved on it, where the implanted bits, the pebbles or the crystals, are enchanted objects in a way. They would potentially have runes and perhaps identifying marks or something along those lines as part of them. So that would be something that could potentially indicate what you might need to find out, or would provide answers to what you might need to find out in terms of using it. The difficulties, I feel, should largely be narrative, and just in a sense of creatively coming up with the way that this particular item might stand out from the others.
Yeah, I came across a set of Blood Pebble armor once in a care, and they happened to find the burial chamber, and it was just a skeleton with all these little tiny rocks on the floor next to the skeleton, you know, interspersed throughout the bones. I'm like, oh, look at that. That's Blood Pebble. I will collect all those little stones and I will take them. But anyway, Aaron says, once again, loving the show. Amazing work, both of you. Yeah, Aaron, keep them coming. We will answer any questions that come to us. So last, and certainly not least, Captain Olimar sends in a ton of stuff for us. So first off, thank you, Josh, for the Fredonia Con session. It was fun. I was Tyro Togar. What was the green ghost cat that we fought? A spirit or a horror?
It was a spirit. If I recall correctly, it was an ally spirit, kind of a hunter spirit of sorts. And I think I even like slapped a corrupted mask on top of it because it was a spirit that was summoned and sent by the nascent questor of Ragok that was sort of the big bad, the enemy, the guy behind everything that was going on in that adventure. So it was a spirit. It was cool. An ally spirit.
Good to know. So thank you, Dan, for keeping up on the fun intros and send-offs every week. I look forward to them. Well, you're the first one to say so I have one fan, and that's okay with me. On to the questions. One, the floating city on Lake Ban has elemental trees on the 5 points of the city wall. There is also a metal tree at the center of the city that is supposed to represent a new true element. Is this element true metal or hinting towards true lightning? I know that there is true metal in Barsave and Cathay, even if it is very rare. I thought it might be lightning because of the lightning-born race in Cathay.
Well, it doesn't have any connection to Cathay or the lightning-born there, because the Serpent River book and the description of the floating city in that was done long before the Cathay source book was written and the lightning-born that were done there. I wouldn't even consider lightning to be its own separate element. I think it's a subcategory of air. Yeah. If I'm recalling the lightning bolt spell correctly, I think it's air / lightning. I don't honestly recall the central tree in the floating city to be metal or having anything to do with metal.
Yeah. I don't recall anything about either, but
not saying that's not the case, because I don't remember us talking about it when we did our
Serpent River stuff
episode on the floating city and House Vistrimmon and all of that.
I don't recall it either.
I can't find anything here right now because it doesn't really go into depth about. I would need a reference to true metal being a thing. There's orichalcum, but that's not true metal. I know within Chinese alchemy, mythology, folklore, or whatever, that metal is considered one of the elements. And I suspect that there may be something in the Cathay books that reference that, but it's not something that I've ever considered to be part of the Barsavian elemental thing. And I can't right now put my hands on anything in the Serpent River book, which is where I'm looking at the first edition book, not the third edition, the Red Brick version, which might have had additional information.
Yeah.
So I can't really address that specifically. It doesn't ring any bells for me. And it certainly didn't come up when we were talking about the floating city when we did the episode on them number of months back.
Yeah.
If you want to have that be the case for your game, that's fine, but it's not something that is on my radar or would have been considered at all.
Fair enough. Question two, and this is a kind of an interesting logistics question. Can True Shot work with Second Shot? He understands if it's not the case.
I don't see why not. True Shot allows you to take some strain to be able to spend more karma. There's nothing that's specifically stated that limits it, and karma is a pretty limited resource, even when you get into higher circles when you have access to second shot. I'm gonna sort of say, for me, I don't have a problem with it, but that is something that could potentially be superseded by an official errata or something, but I'm not aware of any existing.
Yeah. I figure if you can take the strain.
Yeah. The strain is actually the lesser of the concerns. It's just simply that you could perhaps do true shot on your initial missile weapons and then true shot on your second shot. Okay. I don't really see a problem with that because of the nature of karma being a limited resource. You can only do that so many times.
True.
So I don't have a problem with it. But there could potentially be some superseding errata that I'm not aware of because of some kind of balance issue that isn't popping to mind.
Fair enough. Question three. I am loving the horrors episodes and was wondering if you guys will incorporate the half horrors and the Cathay horrors too. Mew is one evil snake.
If we ever get around to addressing Cathay, and I have said multiple times on this show what my feelings on the Cathay books are, I don't even actually have them. I've got them in PDF, but I don't have physical copies of them. I don't have a lot of interest in it. So we're not going to be tackling any horrors or anything like that that appears in those books, unless we tackle those books at all.
Yeah.
The half horrors, are those from somewhere in the Theron Empire book?
I think he's talking about the half horrors in Cathay as well.
Oh, okay. See, because I have not even read the Cathay books, I'm not aware of that. I know there's the what are termed in the original Theron Empire book as the Ulkmen, which are sort of like horror corrupted individuals. I thought there were like horror or half horror things possibly in Marak, but no, we are not at this point planning on tackling them at all. If they were something out of Cathay, it follows the same bit as the horrors that are in Cathay.
But it's been forever and a day since I read the Theron books. If there are half horrors in there, we might get to them, but we'll set that aside.
Addressing either of those would come up when/if we tackle the area or book that they appear in.
Fair. Well stated. Question four. I was listening to a new episode of Name Givers, and I believe Russell said he was working on, hopefully, a new Earthdawn trilogy. Is this true? I must know. I'm already excited about Caroline's books coming out.
I don't know what I am allowed to say about that at this point.
Okay.
That is something that I would need to double check before making any kind of
statement
one way or the other.
Fair.
Rusty has been busy doing a lot of stuff, not just with Shadowrun, but actually he's been writing a bunch of Battletech stuff lately as well. So
go, man, go.
He's been pretty busy and in high demand, as that is understandably the case because he is a fantastic writer.
Yes. Good stuff. Good stuff. Question five. And there are many more to come. When is the next Kickstarter coming? Did we meet the goal in the Grand Bazaar for custom shop ads?
The next Kickstarter is coming sometime after this episode.
But before 2030.
Yeah, we had kind of been hoping to have it launched before now as we record this, but ongoing issues and wanting to have that book done, that being the Magic Deeper Secrets book, we want to make sure that book is done.
Tight.
We did, if I recall, meet the goal, one of the stretch goals in Grand Bazaar, for the advertisements, the custom ads, to be done. Yeah. Those are not going to be tackled until the Grand Bazaar book is actually finished. We don't want to distract ourselves with other things. I think it's going to be good. It's just taking a lot longer to finish than any of us expected or hoped would be the case. And I understand that there are a lot of people that are frustrated and disappointed, but nobody more so than us.
We'll get there when we get there.
Yeah.
No, I'm teasing. Question six. When are Elven Nations episodes coming on the podcast? I'm running a Shosara campaign since October and would enjoy the verbal info and opinions.
Elven Nations is on our list of things to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
We probably might not get to it till towards the end of the summer.
Yeah.
Maybe later in the summer. It depends on exactly what happens with the other episodes that we've kind of got planned. We're going to be tackling the third and fourth circle spells for the magician disciplines. So there's five episodes right there. We actually have taken a look at the original Earthdawn Survival Guide book from which this podcast takes its name.
Yes.
And there are some things in there that we actually are going to address because there is some good content in that.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that are up on tap first. And then I think once those series get through, Elven Nations is on the line, as are reviews of the original published adventures.
Yeah. And Theron other Theron provinces and
And the other Theron provinces, those are sort of the three topics beyond those next two that we're tackling that that are on our
to-do list. Question 7. Will we get a campaign book for the Harwood incident? I think that Nigel Finley's characters could play a role in starting the incident.
There are no plans. There has not been any discussion for a campaign book about the Harwood incident. That is something that would be included as part of a 4th edition Bar Save at War supplement, which I don't really have much interest in tackling myself. It's not something that we have talked about or looked at in our development plans. So, no, I think I talked about the Harwood incident and where it came from all the way back in the 4th timeline episodes 3 years ago, 4 years ago now at this point, that it was conceived as the inciting incident that prompted the events that led to the Second Theron War, and it was intentionally left vague and open as a place for GMs who wanted to involve their player characters in it to get involved in it in whatever sort of capacity they wished. This is the sort of thing that happened, but it is an event that has player characters were involved here written all over it. And I feel like locking that down or defining that more than it already is potentially troublesome, in part because it is going back in time several years. And it's also just not something that anybody on the development team has expressed any interest in expanding or exploring.
Fair enough. Question 8. I know people want a cavalryman path. There is a charioteer discipline in the Cathay Player's Guide. Maybe you could use that as the base for a new path. Same with as a path for the illusionist?
I have no idea. I'm not really involved a whole lot in conceiving the paths that much. I am sort of involved when they are developed, kind of figuring out their narrative place, where they fit within Barsave. I know that some people want a cavalryman path. I don't know that there's necessarily enough demand for that or anything that is strong enough to necessarily require one to be developed. Again, as I mentioned earlier, don't really know anything at all about any of the material in the Cathay books. It's possible that a charioteer discipline could serve as the basis for a cavalryman path. I'm not sure why people feel that cavalryman needs to have a path. For Windlings, at least, Windmaster serves very nicely as a cavalryman path. It enhances their combat ability off their mount by quite a notable amount. And the Sorcerers, I assume, is another Cathay thing. I don't know. Paths are not, for lack of a better term, subclasses, to borrow a D&D thing for the moment. Not that Captain Olimar here is going that route, but in Dungeons & Dragons in 5th edition, when your character reaches 3rd level, you sort of pick a subclass, which is to say a theme or focus for your character. For paladins, for example, there are a number of different oaths that you can take. You choose an oath and it sort of defines the type of paladin you are. There's the oath of vengeance, oath of blah, 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 blah. For rangers, I nearly said beastmasters. For rangers, there's an archer path and a beastmaster path and a swarm keeper, I think, is another one. You know, there's stuff like that. In Earthdawn, there are disciplines that are better suited to certain paths than others, but a path is not really intended to be, this is what you pick up if you are a cavalryman, or this is what you pick up if you are an illusionist. I think there's plenty of room already within the talent options that are available and the role-playing and personality that you can come up with that you don't need to define that mechanically by having a path being available. I can understand, perhaps, players who have characters that are disciplines that are not as well suited to paths as others, perhaps feeling a little bit left out that they don't have access to a whole bunch of neat new tricks like some of their companions do. And I understand that, but at the same time, any kind of path that gets developed by us would need to have some kind of role or function or purpose within the setting, because that narrower focus and mindset and purpose that used to be, at least in some people's minds, interpreted as part of the discipline has shifted over to be part of the paths. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of strong feelings about it one way or the other. I understand the desire perhaps to have access to cool new toys, but it is what it is.
Yeah. If they don't need to be there, they don't need to be there. So, Tyro says, always looking forward to hearing from you guys and all the fans every week. May your travels be legendary and your tales be extraordinary. Tyro Togar.
Yeah, thank you. A lot of good questions there. There are answers that are perhaps not particularly satisfactory, but that's the way that the things are sometimes. I have, in the past, opened my mouth and said more than I really should have, and so I am a little bit more careful when it comes to talking about things like that. But good questions. I appreciate the feedback and the fact that so many folks come back week after week to
absolutely
listen to us natter on.
I just love the 13-year-old found the podcast. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Welcome, 13-year-old listener and player. We will take you. So, folks, that's the end of the episode. We have no more questions for this week. If you have any questions for us for later on, obviously, you can't go back in time to ask questions, please feel free to drop us a line at edsgpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, always question your legend.
Good night, everybody.